Welcome to the History AI Podcast, where the past comes alive with facts, anecdotes, and a dash of humor. Here are your hosts, Chuck and Marco.
Hey there, history buffs. Welcome back to the History AI Podcast, where we dive into the gripping, sometimes surprising, and always fascinating stories from the past. I'm Chuck.
And I'm Marco. Today, we're taking you to the Pacific Theater of World War II for a story that's equal parts courage, tragedy, and heartbreak, the battle for Hong Kong and the haunting day known as Black Christmas.
That's right, Marco. This is one of those episodes where history slaps you in the face with its sheer intensity. But before we dig in, let's set the stage.
Picture it, December 1941. The world is reeling from Pearl Harbor. Japan's forces are advancing rapidly through the Pacific, and Hong Kong, a British colony, becomes their next target.
Now, Hong Kong was a key strategic location for the British, but to be honest, the odds were stacked against them. It was a small garrison defending against the might of the Japanese Imperial Army. The defenders included British, Canadian, Indian, and local Hong Kong troops, about 14,000 in total, facing over 50,000 Japanese soldiers.
So yeah, it was like bringing a slingshot to a tank battle.
Absolutely. And this battle wasn't just a straightforward fight, it was a harrowing, 17-day struggle filled with unimaginable hardship and heroism. The battle for Hong Kong officially began on December 8, 1941, just hours after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. This wasn't a random move by Japan. Hong Kong had strategic value as a key British colony and a port city that could cut off vital Allied supply lines in the Pacific.
That's right. The British forces, under the command of Major General Christopher Maltby, were already on high alert. They had been expecting some form of Japanese aggression, but not on the scale that came. Hong Kong's defenses had been reinforced in the months leading up to the attack, but there was a big problem.
The problem was manpower and resources. The defenders of Hong Kong consisted of about 14,000 men, mostly British and Commonwealth troops from Canada, India, and local Hong Kong regiments. But Japan? They were sending around 50,000 troops, heavily supported by artillery and air superiority. It was a David versus Goliath situation, and Goliath had all the advantages.
Exactly. Now, on the night of December 7th, Japanese forces were already on the move. At 4 a.m. on December 8, 1941, just hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor, the Japanese launched their amphibious assault on the new territories, the northernmost part of Hong Kong.
The assault started with an intense bombardment. The Japanese naval forces launched air raids over the area, which put the defenders on their heels right from the get-go. British forces tried to scramble fighter planes and anti-aircraft guns, but they were no match for the precision and scale of the Japanese attacks.
And then, in the early morning, the Japanese infantry moved in. They crossed the border from China into the new territories, using the dense jungles and rough terrain to their advantage. The British and their allies, who were positioned at defensive positions along the border, found themselves overwhelmed almost immediately.
Right. The defenses in the new territories were primarily a series of hastily constructed pillboxes and machine gun posts. These positions weren't designed to withstand a full-scale assault from an army with superior equipment, like tanks, artillery, and mortars.
One of the biggest challenges was the terrain itself. The new territories were made up of mountainous areas and swamps. While this gave the British defenders some natural advantages in terms of ambush points, it also made it difficult to move troops and supplies quickly. The Japanese, however, had well-coordinated units with experience fighting in similar conditions, particularly in China.
So, despite fierce resistance, by December 10th, the British were forced to retreat southward, abandoning the new territories and withdrawing to the Kowloon Peninsula, which was connected to Hong Kong Island by a narrow strip of land. The defenders held on as best they could, but the Japanese were relentless.
Kowloon was more defensible, but it wasn't a guaranteed victory. The British and Commonwealth forces dug in, hoping to buy time, but the Japanese were already closing in. The defenders faced constant artillery bombardments and infantry attacks. There was no escape, no safe place to retreat.
And that's where the true horror of this battle begins to take shape. The fighting was vicious. Civilians in Kowloon were trapped as well, unable to escape the war zone. There was no clear line between military and civilian targets, which made the whole situation even more tragic.
The thing is, the British were trying to hold on, hoping for reinforcements. They had requested support from the Royal Navy, but those reinforcements never came. The British government was already stretched thin, dealing with the war in Europe and the larger Pacific theater.
And don't forget, the Japanese had air superiority from the start. Their bombers and fighter planes were free to strike military and civilian targets at will. This created widespread panic, not just among the soldiers, but also among the local population. Buildings were leveled, and infrastructure was destroyed in the first few days.
It wasn't just bombs falling from the sky. The Japanese launched psychological warfare, spreading rumors to break the will of the defenders. This kind of approach is characteristic of the Japanese strategy throughout the Pacific, dismantling morale before the battle even really began.
By the time the British forces realized that Kowloon was no longer defensible, they had no choice but to fall back to Hong Kong Island itself. The last hope was to defend the island and hold on for as long as possible. But at this point, morale was flagging, supplies were running out, and every move felt like a desperate gamble.
The retreat to Hong Kong Island was no easy task. The British forces had to cross the harbor by boat, under the threat of air raids and artillery fire. This was a moment of real desperation, as soldiers and civilians alike were fighting just to stay alive.
And this leads us to what's known as the Siege of Hong Kong Island. But one thing is clear, by December 10th, the battle for Hong Kong had already turned into a nightmare. It was a battle that no one expected to last as long as it did, one that would ultimately end in disaster, but not without a fierce defense from the men and women who stood their ground. The odds were stacked against them, but the defenders kept fighting until there was nothing left to give. And that makes the events that followed all the more tragic.
Now let's talk about the final days of the battle for Hong Kong, the days leading up to its surrender, and what made December 25, 1941, forever known as Black Christmas.
By mid-December, the situation for the defenders was dire. After retreating from the new territories in Kowloon Peninsula, British, Commonwealth, and local forces had regrouped on Hong Kong Island. The hope was that the natural harbor and steep hills of the island would make it easier to defend.
And to their credit, the defenders fought hard to hold the island. Major General Christopher Maltby, commanding the garrison, divided the forces into two main brigades, the West Brigade and the East Brigade. They were tasked with defending opposite sides of the island.
The West Brigade, under Brigadier John Lawson, had units like the Winnipeg Grenadiers from Canada and various British regiments. The East Brigade, commanded by Brigadier Cedric Wallace, included the Royal Rifles of Canada, Indian soldiers from the Punjab Regiment, and local volunteers.
But defending the island was easier said than done. On the night of December 18th, the Japanese launched their amphibious assault. Using small boats, they crossed the harbor from the Kowloon Peninsula and landed on the northeast shores of Hong Kong Island.
This assault was nothing short of devastating. The defenders had prepared for an attack, but the Japanese had scouted the area extensively and chosen the most vulnerable points for their landing. They came ashore near places like North Point and Taikoo, overwhelming the defenders with speed and sheer numbers.
And it wasn't just about troop numbers. The Japanese brought artillery and mortars to the island, pounding defensive positions relentlessly before and during the landing. This constant barrage created chaos among the defenders, making it nearly impossible to organize an effective counterattack.
By December 19th, the Japanese had established a firm foothold on the island. Their strategy was to divide and conquer, literally splitting the defenders into isolated pockets of resistance. They quickly pushed toward the center of the island, cutting communication lines between the East and West Brigades.
One of the most heartbreaking moments of this stage of the battle was the death of Brigadier Lawson. He was commanding the West Brigade from his headquarters near Wong Nai Chang Gap, a critical pass that controlled access to the island's interior. When the Japanese attacked the gap, Lawson stayed to coordinate the defense.
Tragically, the gap fell to the Japanese, and Lawson was killed during the assault. His last radio message to his superiors was chilling: "I'm going outside to fight it out." He became one of the highest-ranking Allied officers to die in battle during World War II.
With Wong Nai Chang Gap under Japanese control, the situation became even more desperate. The defenders were now cut off from one another, with no way to regroup or consolidate their efforts. Meanwhile, the Japanese continued their relentless advance.
Let's not forget the civilians. Hong Kong was home to over 1.6 million people at the time, and they were caught in the middle of this brutal battle. Many were forced to flee their homes, while others were trapped in areas where the fighting was fiercest. Hospitals and shelters were overwhelmed, and the civilian casualties were staggering.
By December 23, the Japanese had captured key positions across the island, including Victoria Peak and the reservoirs that supplied water to the defenders. This was a turning point. Without access to fresh water and with supplies running dangerously low, the garrison's ability to hold out was rapidly crumbling.
The fighting grew even more brutal in the final days. Areas like Stanley in the south and the central district of Hong Kong became intense battlegrounds. The defenders were out of food, out of ammunition, and out of time.
On Christmas Eve, the Japanese delivered an ultimatum to Governor Sir Mark Yung: surrender or face complete destruction. Yung, Maltby, and the remaining Allied leadership agonized over the decision. They knew that continuing to fight would result in even more loss of life, especially for the civilians.
And so, on Christmas Day, 1941, Governor Yung made the heartbreaking decision to surrender. At 3:15 p.m., the Union Jack was lowered over the government house, and Hong Kong fell to the Japanese. The surrender of Hong Kong on December 25, 1941, was a devastating blow, but for the soldiers, civilians, and anyone left in the city, the horrors of war didn't end with the ceasefire. In fact, in many ways, the true nightmare began after the fighting stopped.
That's absolutely right. When we think about Black Christmas, it's not just the day of surrender, it's the start of nearly 4 years of brutal Japanese occupation. The occupation of Hong Kong would leave deep scars on the city and its people, both physically and emotionally.
Let's start with the immediate aftermath. Once the British formally surrendered, the Japanese took complete control of the city. Their first order of business was to round up Allied troops and imprison them. The approximately 11,000 Allied soldiers who survived the battle were marched into prisoner of war camps.
These camps were horrific. The largest and most infamous was Sham Shui Po, located on the Kowloon Peninsula. The conditions were inhumane, overcrowding, starvation, and disease were rampant. The prisoners were forced into hard labor, including tasks like building infrastructure to support the Japanese war effort.
And the treatment? Barbaric. POWs were regularly beaten, tortured, and subjected to humiliation. The guards showed no mercy, often punishing prisoners for minor infractions or simply as a show of dominance.
One particularly cruel punishment was standing at attention for hours, sometimes in freezing weather or under the blazing sun, with no food or water. And let's not forget the deliberate withholding of medical care. If a prisoner fell ill, they were often left to die.
Many of the Allied soldiers, especially Canadians, suffered long-term effects from their time in captivity. Survivors reported lingering physical injuries, malnutrition-related conditions, and severe PTSD from the abuse and constant fear they endured.
But the soldiers weren't the only ones who suffered. Civilians faced the full wrath of the occupation. The Japanese army saw Hong Kong as a resource to exploit and its people as expendable. Civilians were forced to bow to Japanese soldiers in the streets, and failure to do so could result in immediate punishment or even execution.
Entire families were uprooted. The Japanese implemented a policy of forced deportation, expelling tens of thousands of Chinese residents from the city. Over 1 million people fled or were forcibly relocated, many to mainland China, where they faced even worse conditions under Japanese rule.
For those who remained, life under occupation was a constant struggle for survival. Food and basic supplies were rationed severely, with most of the limited resources going to Japanese troops and officials. Black markets sprang up, but the prices were astronomical, making survival almost impossible for the poor.
And then there were the atrocities. Mass executions of suspected resistance members, public displays of brutality, and sexual violence were widespread. One of the darkest aspects of the occupation was the systematic rape and abuse of women. Many were forced into sexual slavery as comfort women, a crime that remains one of the most horrific legacies of the Japanese military during World War II.
The Japanese also tried to erase British and Western influence from Hong Kong entirely. English language schools were closed, British street names were replaced with Japanese ones, and the yen was introduced as the city's currency. The Japanese sought to integrate Hong Kong into their Greater East Asia co-prosperity sphere, an empire built on conquest and subjugation.
But through all of this, there were glimmers of resistance. Underground movements sprang up, despite the immense danger. Groups like the British Army Aid Group worked to smuggle supplies, help prisoners escape, and provide intelligence to the Allies.
These acts of defiance were incredibly risky. If caught, members of the resistance faced immediate execution or worse. Yet, the people of Hong Kong refused to give up entirely, even under such brutal conditions.
Let's not forget the impact on families. With so many men killed, imprisoned, or missing, women often became the sole providers. They had to navigate a city controlled by an oppressive regime while trying to feed their children and protect them from harm.
Children, too, faced unimaginable hardships. Many were orphaned or forced to beg on the streets. Some were conscripted into labor or made to serve the Japanese army in auxiliary roles. The scars of this period stayed with these survivors for the rest of their lives.
It wasn't until August 1945, with Japan's surrender at the end of World War II, that Hong Kong was liberated. British forces returned to reclaim the city, greeted as heroes by the beleaguered population.
But liberation didn't erase the pain of occupation. By the time the Japanese surrendered, Hong Kong was in ruins. Infrastructure had been destroyed, the economy was shattered, and the population had been decimated.
The POWs who returned home were often unrecognizable to their families. Malnourished, physically broken, and haunted by their experiences, many faced years of recovery. For the civilian population, the trauma of the occupation lingered as well.
Even today, the occupation of Hong Kong is remembered as one of the darkest periods in the city's history. It's a stark reminder of the human cost of war and the resilience of people in the face of unimaginable adversity.
And perhaps that's the lasting legacy of Black Christmas. It's not just a story of loss, but also one of survival. Despite everything, the battle, the occupation, and the atrocities, the people of Hong Kong endured.
It's a chapter in history that deserves to be told, remembered, and honored. You know, Chuck, what strikes me most about this story is the sheer determination of the defenders. They knew the odds were hopeless, but they fought anyway.
Exactly. It's a testament to their courage and sense of duty. They were fighting not just for Hong Kong, but for the ideals they believed in.
And while the outcome was devastating, the battle left a legacy. The sacrifices made during the defense of Hong Kong are remembered and honored to this day.
There are even monuments in Hong Kong dedicated to those who fought in the battle, like the Cenotaph in Central and the Siwan War Cemetery.
And for Canada, this was a defining moment in their military history. The contributions of Canadian troops, though often overshadowed, are still celebrated as a symbol of bravery and resilience.
That's a wrap on today's episode, folks. Thanks for joining us as we explored the battle for Hong Kong and Black Christmas.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. It helps the podcast grow and reach more history enthusiasts like you.
Don't forget to subscribe and share the show with your friends. You can also suggest topics for future episodes on our social media. Links are in the show notes.
And hey, grab some of our new merch while you're there. Nothing says history buff like a History AI podcast mug, am I right?
Absolutely. Until next time, keep exploring the past to understand the present.
See you next time.
Looking for the perfect way to show appreciation for the incredible mom in your life? Discover Exhausted Moms, a coloring journey to relaxation and humor, the coloring book that speaks directly to the heart of motherhood. Gift her an escape into pages of laughter, empowerment, and moments of tranquility. With Exhausted Moms, she'll find a blend of whimsical illustrations and inspiring quotes that celebrate her daily triumphs and challenges. Crafted with love from images I created for the mother of my children, each page offers a space for creativity and relaxation, a reminder that she's doing an amazing job, even on the toughest days. Give the gift of laughter, peace, and recognition. Exhausted Moms isn't just a coloring book, it's a hug, a nod of understanding, and a token of appreciation for everything she does. Surprise her with Exhausted Moms today and watch her face light up with joy. because every mom deserves a moment to herself, wrapped in the colors of love and support.